Please be advised this podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature. It's not appropriate for children.
So then she started talking to me about writing to somebody in prison, and she was saying her partner had a friend and he needed someone to write to him. You don't have to do anything, she was saying, you know, it's fine, it's nothing, it's just a small thing, it's just company for him. So I did start writing to him, and then it started talking on the phone. Then it was me visiting him, you know, over a period of time.
That's the voice of Australian true crime listener Peter, who has a hell of a story about what happened when she decided to become pen pals with a man in prison. The story is part of an exclusive extra episode of Australian True Crime, which is available now to our second tier patrons. You can become one of those by going to patreon.com/AustTrueCrimePod. That's AUST, Aust True Crime Pod. But there's a link in the notes to this episode, so you don't have to remember that. Thank you so much to all of our patrons. Thank you, Steph Bridges, Sarah Bowditch, Alicia Hubie, Kath Ryan, Beck Tierney, Rebecca Bamba, and everybody else. Okay, let's get on with this week's show. It's a Narelle Fraser show, so I won't keep you waiting another second.
She'd been raped numerous times and she had lots of injuries.
Mm.
All she had was that he was wearing jeans and a hoodie. That is it. I mean, as a detective, where do you go with... However, the lime green van, that's a bit easier, isn't it, to find?
Today on Australian True Crime, Narelle Fraser is taking us all the way back to her very first case with the Rape Squad.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb.
Long-time listeners and devoted Narelle fans will probably remember that joining the squad was a major goal of Narelle's when she entered the police force. So it's no wonder her recall of this case in particular is so incredibly clear. The case covers several attacks thought to have been carried out by one perpetrator, and it became known as Operation Collier. We'll get down to the details in just a minute, but first, Narelle wanted to share some exciting news with you all.
Well, what I've had is I've been contacted by a woman up in Newcastle.
Okay.
Who was listening to Australian True Crime. She loves it.
Good.
Anyway, she emailed me and she said, love you, your podcast. Have you ever thought about a play being written about your life? And I said, actually, I haven't. That's not something that had come up in my thoughts. She's a playwright. Bottom line is she ends up coming down to see me, a lovely lady by the name of Claire.
Okay.
She was on first base anyway, because that's the name of one of my sisters. So, you know, she was on, she got to first base anyway. But her email was just so informative and it was really nice. Anyway, what she does is she flies down from Newcastle.
Gosh.
And we spend a day and a bit together. And she's got all these ideas about this play. And anyway, by the end of the first day together, we spend a day and a night, right? So by the end of the time she goes to leave, I could tell her head was spinning like, bloody hell. Like, and she said, I'm not sure how I'm going to fit a play into, like, a play is 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, she leaves, you know, we go and have a drink with my sister. We get on really well. She's just lovely. Anyway, so she rings me about a week later, and she was going to write up a synopsis for the play and get back to me. Anyway, she rings me about a week later and she said, my husband Steve, he's a film director. And she said, you know, when I said to you about a play, what do you think about a TV series? Hello?
Right.
So, and I did my background because being a detective, I did my background on Claire and Steve. Pazvolsky is their name, Claire and Steve. I do my background and he was nominated for an Academy Award in 2003. I mean, we are talking, yeah.
Wow.
So then he says, look, I'm in at the ABC. He does all these films and he's obviously very good at what he does.
Yeah.
So he rings Claire and he says, I'm in at the ABC right now. He said, I seem to have everybody's attention. Can I mention about Narelle? What do you think? Claire rings me. What do you think, Narelle? So anyway, I said, well, I mean, I don't know where it's going, but I think, oh, well, why not?
Why not?
You know, bottom line is ABC said he does films for ABC, Discovery, SBS, a lot of that sort of stuff. And so between them, like, what a pair. She's a playwright and she's very into the visual. He is into the film directing and all that. So he's listened to all my podcasts and he wanted to come down and see me with Claire. So they come down a couple of weeks ago. Again, we got on like a house on fire. It was like I'd met them yesterday, you know, like yeah. He's just a lovely man, a lovely couple. So, and this is all because of Australian true crime. Can you believe that? He's actually talking about like a series, like 13 episodes. Also, my PTSD is all through the my talking, but they have some great ideas and I'm really excited, really.
Wow.
Yeah, and all because of you guys.
Well, congratulations. Which moment of your extraordinary life are you sharing with us today in this episode?
I'm sharing Operation Collier, which is a job that I did when I was at the Rape Squad. It's still unsolved.
Oh, gosh, these are
and
so
there was 9 incidents. So what I thought I might do is go through the incidents. I joined the Rape Squad in 98 and it virtually started the minute it hit my desk the minute I started there.
So your first one?
Yes. Wasn't a good start because it's still unsolved. But we investigated what ended up being a series of 9 incidents committed in the Dandenong Ranges between 96 and 2001. Most of them were going to or from a railway station.
So the Dandenongs, for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with the area, so that's the mountains outside of Melbourne, sort of little villages dotted all the way around there. So there's lots of
little hamlets sort of, aren't they?
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful place, but there's lots of quiet areas.
Oh, yeah. Lots of bush.
Lots of bush. So was that the situation?
Yes.
Were they in isolated areas?
Yeah.
Was the community afraid after the first, I mean, again, it's a very tight-knit community. It's after the first girl has been abducted at knife point or gunpoint.
Well, it gets a bit complicated because the first incident, we didn't actually know about it for 4 years later.
Oh, how is that possible?
Well, the young girl was so traumatised, she left, went overseas.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And didn't report?
Well, she did. In fact, I'll tell you about that now. But keeping in mind that we didn't know about this for a long time. It was only when the second one happened that we started to look at similar incidents in the area and all that sort of stuff, because she made what's called, the first girl, made what's called a statement of no further police action.
Oh.
She was so traumatised by it and so affected that she didn't want to talk about it. And I understand that.
Yeah.
She was only 16 at the time.
Oh.
And all she wanted to do was forget about it.
I didn't know you could do that. So she has reported it.
Yes.
And so she's been interviewed?
No. She said she didn't want anything to, she didn't want to talk to anybody. She just wanted it to go away.
So she's just said, I've been sexually assaulted and I don't want any further thing to happen.
What you do with a statement of no further police action is you're saying that an offence has occurred against you, but you don't want to go ahead with court. You don't want to go ahead. You don't want to have anything to do with it because, and you can put in, like generally in a statement of no further police action, we call it an NFPA, statement of NFPA. What you would normally do is say, look, this happened on this date. You don't go into any detail.
Yeah, okay.
Because the young girl didn't want to. And generally you'll say, this happened, but I don't want to go ahead with it because I'm I'm too traumatised by it. You don't have to put in the reasons. But anyway, if that's what they want, that means that we can't even get evidence from the young girl if she's been sexually assaulted, like DNA. You've got to be very careful in these sort of situations because really the court process, the police process, when you are first assaulted, sexually assaulted, it's a very intimate process which we can't do much about. She had been at a party in Emerald. She'd had an argument with her boyfriend and she'd left. Nothing unusual. I mean, that happens a lot. But what she did was she walked to a bus stop and started hitchhiking. So now it's the early hours of the following morning. And a male stopped in a little red car. And he said, "Where are you going?" And I don't know, whatever she said, Belgrave or whatever. And he said, "I'll jump in. I'll take you," because she was hitching, right? So in the car, she actually thought he was quite a nice man, understanding. She was having a bit of a whinge to him about a relationship. It wasn't going well. And he actually said that he told her that he was married, that he was on his way home from work. He worked in a factory in Dandenong and he lived up around Cockatoo, I think. She'd been to the party, so she's quite affected by alcohol. And along the way, while she's talking, she falls asleep. She wakes up on a dirt road and there's a knife at her throat. He's pulled over and pulled out a knife. He instructs her to undress. And she's obviously not quick enough, so he rips off all her clothes and he rapes her in the vehicle. He gets out, opens the doors and throws her down an embankment, like just discards. And she plays dead. He hangs around for a while and eventually, I think he must think that he's, you know, knocked her out or killed her or something, I don't know. But eventually she runs out onto the road, she flags down a motorist who we identified, would you believe that, 4 years later, and he takes her to the Knox police station. But she was, as I said to you, she was so distressed and so traumatised that she didn't want to take it any further. So that's where she went overseas to escape and visit friends. In the statement of no further police action, the police can say, "Look, could you just give me a description of the man?" So there's you just try and get as much as you can, but you've got to take into consideration how distressed she is. Anyway, she gave the description of early 40s, Caucasian, a receding hairline, thick, well, I don't know, wavy hair, and he smoked. So we then go to March of 98. We've got an 18-year-old. This is the second incident that we thought was the first. 9:30 at night, the girl's had an argument with her boyfriend and she gets in her car, she's just 18, gets in a car and drives to the Upper Ferntree Gully Tennis Club alone. She just wanted to go somewhere where she could, I don't know, just park somewhere and get her head together, have a bit of a ball, you know, a bit of a cry. We've all done that. So she's there for a while and about 15 minutes later, a little blue station wagon drives into the car park. Like this is at 9:30 at night, so no one else is there. And the person drives to the opposite end of the car park to where she is and they sit there for about 15 minutes. But as the person at the other end of the car park leaves, they shine the lights on this girl and put the high beam on so high that she has to shield her eyes. And anyway, off they go. 10 minutes later, the same little car, blue station wagon, comes back. But this time what it does is she's driven into the car park, so this person reverses in right next to her so she can't open her door. And she's panicking, like she's feeling very, very scared. So she's actually, she can't get out and she's frozen with fear. What she wants to do is start the car and just drive off.
Yeah.
But she's so frightened that she can't.
Yeah.
So she contacts her boyfriend, rings him, hysterical. And eventually she's able to get herself together enough to be able to start the car with the help of her boyfriend, just calm down, turn the car. You know, she was just that traumatized. So she leaves. But what he does is he follows her.
Mm.
But the boyfriend is coming. Well, he's coming to her, like he might be 10 minutes away. Mm. But the car's following her. So she says to the boyfriend, he's following me, I don't know where to go. So she drives all around Upper Ferntree Gully, like just panicking. Anyway, the boyfriend happens to cross paths with her at an intersection, and the car, the guy with the blue station wagon, is right behind her. And when he comes up next to her, he just escapes, you know, drives off.
Yeah.
But the boyfriend actually happens to get the rego.
Wow.
Yeah, how good's that? However.
Because how's the confidence of this guy? Okay.
Yeah. However.
Yeah.
We've never been able to find the car because we don't think the rego was right. And if it was right, it had been mucked around with, because nothing like that, there was no stolen plates similar.
Okay.
It didn't go with the car. Like, we tried every configuration. Anyway, we could, but I think the boyfriend has saved that young girl.
Yeah.
From, I think it was a pretty obvious he was trying to do her head in.
God.
We didn't get any description of the car. Of the man. We know it was a male. That was all that she knew. But at the time, it was reported to the police. But there didn't appear to be any action. Like, nothing was done. It was just somebody following someone. And I think whoever's taken the call at the police station has put the, you know, just it's fallen through the cracks.
Is it one of those things that in your telling of it now and in retrospect, to us, it's all terrifying, horrifying.
Yeah. Mm.
But at the time, no actual crime's been committed. It's hard to, what do you do about it? Is it one of those?
Well, it is a bit, because it's not even a stalking.
No.
Because a stalking is about a course of conduct. So
yeah.
You've got to be able to show a couple of occasions where somebody has done. So this is just somebody trying to frighten the life out of somebody, just really psychological stuff.
And like if you've got the license plate number, you run it through the computer, nothing comes up, what else can they do about it at the time?
Yeah. But if I took that report, to me, that wouldn't be a one-off. That would be something that the red flags would go right to the top with me.
Okay.
Because he's left, he's thought about it, he's come back, he's parked right next to it. That is not somebody that just drives into a car park. Like, and also, what's he doing driving around car parks looking for, you know, so from my point of view, with my expertise as such, I suppose, I would think that is a very, very worrying sign. But I understand somebody that's just in the job, it's just on the watch house, takes the call. I can understand them thinking, it's just a frightened girl. You know, look, you survived and
it's over.
Yeah. So we have no description, nothing.
Yeah.
Again, we don't find out about this job.
So when do the Rape Squad realise they have a serious serial offender on their hands? Find out after the break. Coming up on Australian True Crime, the pieces of the puzzle start coming together. But first, one young woman in the wrong place at the wrong time has the terrible misfortune to start the ball rolling.
This young girl, she's only 15. She's come home from the city, I think, and she gets off at the Belgrave railway station. Now, if you're a man or an offender that is looking for single young people, I would imagine you hang around a railway station, particularly up in the country area where we're talking about, because there's no other way to get home. So she gets off the train and she starts hitching home. Home's probably about 15 minutes away, maybe a bit longer. Anyway, a male pulls up in a car and he says, hop in. No worries. He's smoking. He says to her that he's on his way home from work. They're talking just generally, but they come to an intersection where to go to her place is left, but he turns right. Mm. And she says something to him like, where are you going? And she attempts to get out of the car. So what he does is he leans across, grabs her hair and pulls her hair and pulls her back into the car. And he drives onto a dirt track just near there, but he pulls out a handgun from the right-hand side. He pulls out a gun and he says to her, he instructs her to undress. He rapes her several times in the car and he drives her into Emerald, into the township, and just leaves her in the middle of nowhere.
God.
Just leaves her. And she actually, as he's leaving, she sees his number plate. I don't know how she saw it, but she kept repeating it to herself over and over again. And she rings her mum. I don't know how there's a phone box just near there. And she rings her mum and she is hysterical. Mum's only about 10 minutes away. But when the mum arrives, the first thing she says is, through all her trauma and everything, she says, get me a pen and paper, mum, quick. So mum gives her the pen and paper and she writes down the rego.
Wow.
How good's that?
It's amazing.
So mum immediately takes her to the police. With the police's help, she's able to identify the crime scene. The police that did it initially, they took a plaster cast of a tyre. They found a tyre impression, so they took a tyre cast. And, of course, they put the rego through the system and they find out that it's stolen plates.
Ah.
So, and the plates, the car had been stolen in South Yarra. So that's a fair way, isn't it?
From a long way
South Yarra up to, she was able to give us a description of the offender. She said that he was about 40, Caucasian, medium height, medium build. He had a dark blonde, sort of lightish sort of hair, receding, stubble, gold-rimmed glasses, and he smoked. The only thing she could tell us about the car was that it was a small, dark hatchback or a sedan. That's pretty hard to, you know. So this is when we get called. We do what we can. We get her examined and she's very traumatised, but with her mum by her side, she's very she wants to help us. That took a lot of resources. We put everything into that, but we didn't get very far.
No.
I've got to be a bit careful that we don't I don't go through everything that we do in the rape squad or, you know, as a detective, but you look at the obvious stuff, you know, like similar incidents in the area, people that have just, been released, something as simple as maybe like peeping Toms or, you know, we might look at people in the area that have, like cruelty to animals. These really sexually,
of course, arson, like stealing undies and stuff.
Yeah,
from
snow droppers. Yeah, you look at all that stuff, and that can take you off on all different tangents.
Yeah, of course.
But we then have the next incident. It's in October 98, and this was a bit different because this was two girls, two 15-year-olds. These two get off the train at Upway. It's 10 to 10 at night and they're walking home. They walk through the Upway Recreational Reserve, you know, and they sit on the logs there, you know, and just having a bit of a chat anyway. They're sitting on some pine railing and this guy drives up in a, and all we can get from the girls, because they're so traumatised by what's happened, is that it's a blue square-shaped car. But what he does is he drives past, and it's 9:50 at night, so you can't see much, particularly at the Upway Recreational Reserve. It's as black as. So he does a U-ey. He drives past them, does a U-ey and comes back. Anyway, he gets out of the car and he actually points a handgun at both the girls, instructing him, pardon me, to get in the effing car. So he is very aggressive with a gun. So good on him. They both scream and run in opposite directions.
Oh, wow.
Because they're just so traumatised. Yeah. So one runs one way, one runs the other. What he does is he gets in the car and he chases one of them. And she disappears. She finds a house and she hides behind a bush, and he doesn't know where she is. So he then decides, I'll chase the other one. So he chases this other girl and he grabs her, and she's got a and he leans out of the driver's side window, and he's able to grab, she's got a backpack on, and he grabs her. But the backpack comes off its buckles, and he grabs the backpack, but she escapes. We've never found the backpack, ever. Anyway, she managed to escape as well. The backpack has never been recovered, and both the girls, as you can appreciate, were very, very traumatised.
Oh, God, how terrifying.
That's what we would call an attempted abduction.
Yeah.
Right? That's serious shit. And the description of him by the girls, again, they were very traumatised, but it was pretty similar. We don't have much luck we put a lot of resources into this. Mm. And we just, there's a couple of people you look at, but you interview them and then they've got an alibi. Or then we've got another incident. The next incident is in December 98, and this is a bit different. This girl's 16, 7:30 in the morning. All the others have been late at night. This is at 7:30 in the morning, and she's walking along Wellington Road, Clematis, which is, again, up that way.
Okay.
In that area, in that 10K radius, and she's walking towards the bus stop to go to school. A maroon station wagon or four-wheel drive stops and offers her a lift. And she says, yeah. So he says, hop in. Easy. He drives about 50 metres and he pulls over, and she thinks, really, this isn't good, and she's so uncomfortable that she tries to get out of the car, but it's locked. Anyway, he produces a gun. As if the gun isn't enough, he then produces this large knife.
Wow.
Yeah. So it is escalating big time.
Yeah.
And he threatens her. He says, to do as he says, and he then puts a blanket over her so she can't see. Yeah, scary stuff.
Mm.
Throughout the next sort of 10 minutes or so, she feels something against her head, and she's sure it's the gun. And he stops and he instructs her to get in the back. In the back of the car, he's obviously very well prepared. He's got a mattress on the back, and he's got curtains in the rear of the car. And with the firearm pointing at her head, he says, get your clothes off. He actually says, he plays with her head, something terrible here, because he actually says to her that he's been watching her for weeks. Mm. He knows her name. He knows where she lives, where she goes to school. I mean, that in itself would just do your head in, wouldn't it? Anyway, he rapes her, and she resists, and he hits her over the head. Once he assaults her, a number of times, but he then drives her to within 500 metres of the Belgrave railway station, and he threatens her not to tell anyone. Would you believe, with all the trauma this young girl has been through, she remembers the rego. Wow. As he drives off, she gets the rego. And what we establish is that it is a stolen car. Mm. The plates are from another car. And it was from a nightclub in Ferntree Gully.
Okay, so that's up around the same area.
Oh, right? Yeah.
It would have been
would be 20
KT's
minutes, would it
or
be?
Something. Yeah, okay. There was a nightclub on Burwood Highway where the old Swagman used to be. I think that's probably the one.
Oh, the old Swagman brings back memories.
I think that would have been it.
Oh, dear me.
So he's stolen this one from up around the area there.
Well, not necessarily him, but because the plates have come from a car there. So what if he's, you know, there's a lot of scenarios, but what if he's got access, I don't know, it could be a group of guys that are stealing number plates, they're swapping them on different cars. Like, it's not necessarily him that's stealing the car.
That's why you are a great detective and I am not, because I just assume that he is going out of a night and thinking, I'm going to go and stalk and find a girl, so best I steal a car on my way. But I never thought of that. We don't know that for sure. There could be, any number of scenarios. Okay.
Remember the parachute theory?
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm. Okay.
The mind is like a parachute. Yes. It only works if it's open.
Mm.
Yes. Clearly you have gone straight to the ground.
You didn't even pull the cord.
Yes. So, she's remembered the plates, but again, that doesn't get you anywhere.
Nope. Oh. Well, it does. It doesn't, but what you do is there's obvious stuff, you know, where the plates were stolen from, CCTV footage of where it was, there's a lot of avenues that you can look at, but it's really looking down a rabbit burrow, really.
Yeah, because we're talking about...
And she's so traumatised. Yeah.
And in the late 90s, was there much CCTV around train stations yet?
You're kidding me, aren't you? Yeah. No.
No, okay.
No. Oh, the detectives have got it easy these days.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Facebook and I feel like with the locations of where these happened, I feel like this offender or offenders know the area because
absolutely
I know the area and some of those places it's like Billy Goat Country.
Yeah, yeah. You're right.
You know, dirt tracks everywhere.
Yeah.
You need a bit of local knowledge. There's no Google Maps back then.
No,
you'd have to be having your mailways out. So I feel like do you think he's a local?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's either a local or he has been, but he knows the area like the back of his hand. Yeah. Like places like I understand people hanging around railway stations, but when you go into the Upway Recreational Reserve or
car park there.
You know these places and you know that people, you might have young couples going parking or you know the places where people want to be on their own. Yeah. It's very possible this job it's very possible that it's him, but it's very possible it isn't as well, and that's the difficulty you have. So with this one, it's a young 17-year-old girl, and she's walked to the bus stop opposite the Selby General Store to catch a bus. She's alone at the bus stop, and a guy in a maroon four-wheel drive, stops and says, "Hey, do you want a lift?" She says, "No, thanks." He seems to get really annoyed and he takes off really suddenly. The wheels,
wheel. So he has a little tantrum when she says no.
Yeah, he does. Has a little tantrum. Mm. And again, if she didn't tell us this, we wouldn't know, but it all paints the picture starts to emerge. Mm. And anyway, the description she gave was 35 to 40, which is a large round head. Medium to fat, short dark hair, and Australian. So that's another little incident. But if we didn't know about it, you can't.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that girl could have got a rego and it could have taken us down another path. The next incident is October of 2000. And this is, again, this is not an offence as such. It's not even, again, a stalking. We can't get it up to a stalking. But she's a young 15-year-old. She's walking to the bus stop at Menzies Creek. Again, it's all in that 10K radius. Yeah. She observes a white ute drive past. Again, another car, right? He does a U-turn, drives past her again. She feels really, really uneasy. Anyway, the driver backs back and he says, "Hey, do you want a lift?" And she says, "No, thanks." He tries to talk her into getting the vehicle, saying, "Look, you know, I'll save you money and all that." Anyway, she sticks to her guns and says no. Anyway, he clearly gets pissed off, he gets annoyed, and he takes off very suddenly. She doesn't say anything to anyone. It's just, oh, yeah, just this creep at the bus stop sort of, right? Anyway, the description she gives is, again, pretty similar, mid-30s, medium height, short brown hair. Oh, right, I know who that is. You know, please. But at least we've got something. But this time he was wearing big, dark sunglasses and a huge moustache. Like, it's almost like a fake moustache. And the description of the car she gave us was pretty good. A white ute, very new and low. Like, this is very unlike the others, right? Yeah. But you can't discard it. Similar to a Chevy GMC, you know, those big mothers.
Like a bit boxy, aren't they?
And she was pretty good because she could tell us that it had a Texas skull mounted on the grill and a blue tarpaulin.
Well, this is very it's pretty flashy, good. And it's also a very flashy car. It's got
a lot different, isn't it?
A lot to make it
If you
stand
want to
out.
Be inconspicuous, you don't put a skull thing on your car.
It's a very conspicuous car.
However, she gets a very good description, but she doesn't get a rego, as you wouldn't expect.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's got, and it's probably stolen, you know, but bullhorn sticker on the rear window. So she's given us a really good description. But we don't hear about that until a week later, because a week later a friend of hers is walking to the bus stop at Menzies Creek. It's around dusk. A white ute drives past three times, you know, up, back up, and she's starting to get the creeps. The driver says, "Do you want a lift?" "No, thanks," and he just drives off. There was no description other than dark hair. Now, with that, the only reason we find out about the one before is that she's gone to school, told her friends, and her friend says, "That happened to me last week."
Yeah.
Hence why we found out about that.
Wow, okay.
However, with the description, we were never able to take that any further.
Okay.
But sometimes we would rather know the police. I can't get my head out of not being a police person, but we'd rather know about these things than not know. The next incident is a lot more serious. This happens in December of 2001. Now, this is the one that it's very different to the others, but it's in the same area. It's at a bus stop, it's late at night, and it's a female alone, so you've got to look at it. Mm. The girl was, she's left a restaurant in Belgrave. It's 1:30 a.m. She's leaving, intends to walk home. So it's in the right area, right, and the right time. Opposite Belgrave Railway Station, a lime green van pulls up and the guy winds down the window. She's seen him earlier that night and he says he's been in the wherever she was. I don't know if it was a pub or a restaurant or something, but she sees him earlier in the night and so he says, "Hey, do you want a lift?" She thinks, "Yeah, okay." You know, he's 30-ish, average build, wearing a suit and a shirt, nothing. Well, she doesn't know what the others are like, but we do. But this is completely different, wearing a shirt.
Yeah.
He drops her near the Gembrook Belgrave Road, really isolated. The van leaves and she's waiting for another car. She's hitching, waiting for another car to ride home. She sees this van that's dropped her off drive past about 10 minutes later. And she sees the bloke park in a reserve just opposite where she's waiting and he puts the curtains up in the van and anyway drives past her again and she hears it in the distance and it stops and she hears it come back. Like, how creepy would this be? And she hears it driving back really slow. And but she feels like she's a little bit nervous, but she also thinks, "Stop being so nervous. He's probably just checking because he's dropped me in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. You know, he's sort of looking after me." Anyway, she's playing a game on her mobile phone waiting for a, you know, she's sitting down on the dirt waiting for a car, playing on her mobile phone, and she looks up and about 20 metres away is a male walking towards her. He's wearing jeans and a hoodie. He hits her in the face.
With his hand?
Like
a punch?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And they struggle. She knees him in the groin like it's full on, you know, fight. Anyway, she wakes up in the grass with her clothes all in disarray.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Her underpants and tracksuit pants are down by her, around her ankles, and she's bare between her waist and her feet. She'd been raped numerous times and she had lots of injuries.
Mm.
Now, the description of this bloke, all she had was that he was wearing jeans and a hoodie. That is it. I mean, as a detective, where do you go with, however, the lime green van, that's a bit easier, isn't it, to find than the hoodie. So the lime green van, we know it's got she's explained that it's got curtains on the rear window, bench front seat, smelled of chaff. See, little things like that can actually really help.
Yeah.
We identify a suspect and arrest him. We think we know who it is. However, we get a DNA sample from him. It's not him.
So the lime green van, man in the shirt, and then the rapist, they're the same person or they're two different people?
Well, we thought they were, but they weren't. Because DNA didn't match.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's left DNA. Yeah. He's raped her. So he's left DNA. It doesn't match. Jeez. It's not him. And we thought, like, this is what I mean with when you close your mind and you think, we've got him.
Yep.
You just pack up, that's him.
Yeah.
And you know what? It all comes back and it's not him. Sometimes everything can fit so well, sometimes you can almost make it fit.
I bet.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But when that came back, it was like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, we thought we had him. And... like, he lived in the area, this bloke, you know. He was reasonable to the description. He had links. Would you believe he had links to a blue car? Wow. He had links to a red car. He had, and you'd think, this is him hands down.
Yeah. Tested again.
Known to the police.
Yes. Oh, God, how annoying.
Was eliminated.
Oh.
Yeah, that is still unsolved.
God. And did this have a lot of publicity at the time? Oh, yeah. Like Herald Sun TV?
Yes, yes. We checked every registered Toyota 4Runner, maroon colour, in Australia.
Wow.
There were thousands. And we checked every one because he was driving a red 4Runner. And that is still an unsolved case.
So these attacks happened over a 5-year span in around that area?
Yep.
And then stopped in that area.
You generally don't stop at where he's stopped. So it means that he's, you know, maybe gone overseas, he's maybe died, he's, there's a whole lot of things. Maybe he's, I don't know, found religion. You know, some people find, I don't know, God or.
Maybe he's dead.
Hopes. Well, I don't hope so. Sorry, did I just say that out loud?
You just accidentally told the truth.
That's what the listeners want to hear.
Let's be honest. That's why.
Okay.
That's why TV needs you. Thank you.
If you have any information about Operation Collier, you can call Crime Stoppers on 1-800-333-000 or send us a direct message on social media and we'll be happy to pass it on. If it's an emergency, always call 000.